Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished and respected medical professional from London, UK, Dr. Larissa Korda. Larissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. So sorry, I'm soaked in rain, in the London rain at the moment.
I know. Dr. Korda is an obstetrician and a gynecologist with a specialist in fertility. She's a TV doctor. She's an author of a book titled The Conception Plan. She believes in a mind-body holistic approach to well-being and fertility, combining the best of modern cutting-edge science with the ancient wisdom of complementary approaches, bridging the allopathic and alternative, and addressing the physical, mental, and spiritual dimensions of women's health. And given the incredible work that she's been doing, Larissa has been recognized and felicitated several times. So let me start by asking you my first question, which is, can you share your journey into specializing in obstetrics, gynecology, and fertility?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? So I guess it all started from a fairly young age, if I trace it back. So my roots are former Yugoslavian, and back in the early 90s, my country went through a horrific civil war.
Absolutely.
I was 8 at the time, and that left a very big impact on me, especially seeing what so often happens in many regions of war and trauma and conflict, that women and children tend to be disproportionately affected. And having witnessed a lot of that, I think that passion to want to help women and girls in particular was instilled in me. And later on, I remember reading a book by Christian Northrup called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom, which came out in the early 90s at the time this was all going on. And it was a huge sort of book and Bible that my mum bought and kept by her bedside. And I remember reading this book, which was so novel and new age at the time, and written by a gynecologist in the States, Dr. Christian. And again, that left such a huge impression on me. I was just fascinated by how she was drawing on these elements of Eastern medicine and bohemianism, really, and incorporating it into her Western work. And allopathic traditions as a doctor. So that had that combined with my upbringing as well. My mum is a gynecologist, and I learned a lot from her. In many ways, I saw how hard she worked and and the difficult hours she did, which wasn't easy. But whereas I learned a lot from my mum down that medical path, I also learned a lot from my great aunt and grandma, who the book is dedicated to. And they were really the bohemian spirits in our family. So I think I got a lot of my love for the alternative through them.
How wonderful.
And developing that.
And you also got very interested in the mind and body holistic approach to fertility. Tell me a little bit more about this, and how have you integrated a science like obstetrics and gynecology with a holistic approach in mind and body?
Yes. So that really evolved over time. I trained down the Western route, which is the mainstream route, really, here in London in the UK. And then I really had what I would call my Saturn return astrologically. So when I turned 30, I traveled to Australia. And I worked there, and that's when I was really exposed to the land of the alternative and the free. And I, as I said, I think that bohemian spirit had always been within me, but that was a real chance to kind of explore certain areas and become accustomed to some of the more alternative esoteric forms of treatment and healing. And then gradually over time, I started actually pursuing some of those routes myself. So, whenever I'd have a particular situation that I'd need to call upon, I'd actively use a combination of both Eastern and Western approaches. And as I got deeper into understanding and studying some of the science behind the alternative approaches, it became really clear to me that these two worlds needed to exist together. But it puzzled me that they didn't, and that quite often doctors didn't really understand the alternative world or just outright dismissed it. And I didn't think that that was fair. And I have for a long time been of the opinion that actually that whole Eastern ancient world has so much to offer us. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking at ways to try and combine the two. And mm-hmm. that was really how the conception plan came to be and how it was born, my attempt to bridge these two worlds of science mm-hmm. and spirit together, having studied both very academically.
How amazing. And Larissa, what are some common misconceptions about fertility that you encounter when you work with so many different mm-hmm. people?
Well, I think one of the biggest ones is this disservice that we have going on within our educational system, in that so much, if you're lucky enough to have sex education at school, and mm-hmm. a lot of people aren't, but, you know, even in the UK, sex education is limited. And if you do have it, most of the education is focused around how not to get pregnant, mm-hmm. how not to, you know, expose yourself to sexually transmitted diseases and avoid pregnancy at all costs. So the impression that's given is that it's relatively easy to fall pregnant, and that it's something that you should kind of be avoiding at all stages of your mm-hmm. life. And the truth of the matter is that actually a lot of people really do struggle massively. We know that at the moment it's 1 in 7 heterosexual couples who struggles to have a child. And the figure is probably more than that, because of course, so many of these people struggle in silence. So it's a really, really huge demographic that was brought up to believe that getting pregnant is as easy as, you know, sitting on a toilet seat. and, you know, that's just not true. Yeah. So that's one of the biggest myths that I think, you know, part of what I'm trying to do about educating on fertility is really trying to educate people from a very young age to learn about what it is to be fertile in all aspects of your life. Yeah. But also the other thing that's a bit of a pet hate of mine is that, you know, so often women in particular get told that after the age of 35, they fall off this cliff and they suddenly can't have children. And, you know, that they must rely on alternative sources and technologies. And yes, for some women, it is true. They will go through that earlier decline. They may go through an earlier menopause. And we know, a lot of us know, that, you know, eggs and sperm will start to decline in number and also quality with time and with age. But it is simply not true that this, you know, cliffhanger happens, at least not for the majority of people. And there are so many women that absolutely have huge fertile potential in their 40s, but are just never brought into that awareness and what they can be doing to help themselves, and how we know the later science is showing there are very active things we can do. And this is what the conception plan, my 12-week plan, is all about, showing the science behind how you can actively preserve the DNA of your eggs and your sperm, stabilize it, be able to exert a positive influence on the telomeres, be able to extend reproductive windows and lifespans. Mm-hmm. So this whole concept of what you've probably spoken about before in your podcast, biohacking, so being able to actively do something to help influence the longevity of not just your life and your lifespan, but also your eggs and your sperm. And that's something hugely exciting. And I think where a lot of our research will go in the future.
Well said, well said. You know, when I was preparing to speak to you, I was fascinated by a term which I hadn't heard of earlier, which is preconception care. Help me understand your approach to preconception care.
Well, thank you for pointing that out, because actually you're not alone in that. I think a lot of people have never heard of preconception and often ask me, what is preconception care? And in a way, it's quite bizarre that we haven't, because preconception is that whole period of time between when you actually become fertile and you actually start, you know, having your period as a woman, which could be, you know, when you're very young, all the way up to when you become pregnant. So that can be a really long period of time during which I try and educate you should be doing all these important things to address your health. So looking at your nutrition, your exercise, managing stress, living in a toxin-free way, and managing not just the relationships around yourself, but the most important one that we have, which is the relationship with ourselves. Mm-hmm. So this is the time to be actively investing, not just in terms of your reproductive potential, mm-hmm. but also your long-term health, because we know that everything you do during that time sets you up for the future and sets you up for how well you're going to do later in life, even things such as how well you're going to transition the menopause and the andropause if you're a man. So there's lots of evidence about that now. Mm. And it is bizarre to me that no one really talks about it, because it's possibly the longest period in your life, right? And it's a vital period of time during which we can all be doing so much more. So the conception plan, though, a lot of people think it is purely for people who want to be actively pregnant right now or in the next few months. Actually, the conception plan is for everyone who's looking to be pregnant at some point in the future, no matter and regardless of when. And even if they're not looking to be pregnant, they should still be applying the same principles, because all the things that lead to a better reproductive lifespan are the things that actively also invest in better long-term health.
And, you know, again, when reading about you, it was interesting to see that your method can optimize the chances of a natural, healthy pregnancy. What are some of these things that you're doing? Because everyone wants a natural, healthy pregnancy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the thing about it is that it increases your natural chances of being able to conceive by virtue of effectively making you the fittest, healthiest version of yourself and looking after your eggs and sperm, and really importantly, that environment that the baby grows in. So when we commit to the five pillars of the conception plan, which are what I mentioned, nutrition, exercise, stress management, toxin-free living, and relationships, when we really adopt those principles and we do the inner work, which is effectively healing ourselves, we not only learn to parent ourselves, but we also learn to become better parents. And at the same time, we're investing in our health, but also the health of any future children that are born. So a natural side effect and consequence of that, I find, is that many people do go on and have children naturally, whereas before they may have been told they may need assisted reproductive technologies. And even if they do need IVF, IUI, or whatever the technology is to help them, and sometimes there are, you know, very real reasons for that, sometimes anatomical reasons you can't get past, it still optimizes your chances of success with those technologies, because quite often you need several rounds of those treatments. Yet what the conception plan tries to do is to effectively make you the fittest, most fertile version, so that you only, for example, need one or two of those rounds rather than several. And very importantly, diminishes some of the negative impact that having those treatments can have. So when you're exposed to all of the hormones that you may be receiving during an IVF cycle, you need to be really mindful about how to negate some of those side effects, because they can translate over onto children as well. So yeah, the principles apply regardless of whether you're looking to have a natural birth or one that's assisted, but it does improve your chances of conception. And we have that televised here in the UK. That's, you know, the one of the couples that I looked after on TV who was told they'd need IVF. They struggled for 3 years and they ended up having baby Freddie through following my methods after just a couple of weeks, which was amazing. And that all happened naturally, even when they had big problems on the female and male side that were interfering with that ability. So it is possible.
Oh, wow. And the other question that I've often thought about, you know, I became a father 38 years ago, so long time back.
But you don't look it at all.
But Larissa, how does stress affect reproductive outcomes based on all your research?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of research into this. I've basically looked at so many papers, some of which argue it doesn't have an impact, others which argue that it does. And then, of course, there's experiential research that you do through witnessing and supporting many couples on this path. Mm-hmm. And what I can say is that stress is such a broad term. Because when we talk about stress, we're not just talking about stress such as, you know, for example, me getting to the podcast on time today in the pouring rain outside and with terrible traffic, right? That's one version of acute stress.
Yeah.
But we're talking about stress that may have accumulated for many years and, in fact, many generations that predate even our existence. So we're talking about generational trauma. We're talking about our own personal trauma that may have occurred either whilst we were still a fetus in our mother's womb, depending on what she was experiencing, or when we were born, when we were children. So much in particular of that childhood stress has been shown to dysregulate our nervous system. Now, the nervous system is incredibly connected with the reproductive system on many levels, but also with the immune and the endocrine system. So stress has an impact on what we call our psychoneuroimmunology. So it's this interplay between our neurological, immune, endocrine, and psychological systems. And you can't dissociate one from all of the others, because if there's an imbalance going on one end, it is inevitably going to affect all of the others. And the effects of that can translate down to the level of the reproductive organs, which quite often express stress and express trauma in their own particular way. So the womb, the ovaries, the testicles, all of these organs have the ability to store, not just the organs themselves, but the cells have an ability to store memories, to store past experiences. And unless we look at this seriously, unless we accept that actually stress in its broadest term does have an impact. And in fact, our cells also have stress receptors. So they have receptors to one of the stress hormones, several of the stress hormones, but one of them being corticotropin releasing hormone, or CRH. So the fact that we can show this through science, of course, must mean that there is something that is going on at the level of that cell in response to stress, in response to the endocrine imbalance that's being created there. This is the simple reason of how stress might have an impact. But of course, it's more complex than that, in the sense that it effectively impacts your epigenetic environment, which is that whole environment that controls our genes and our gene behavior. And that's huge.
Amazing. Amazing. What a great response. Thank you. My next question is that how can individuals or couples become more empowered in their health and fertility journeys?
I think the first step is realizing that so much of that power to be fertile and to be able to carry a pregnancy is within you and starts off with you and is resurrected through the power of your own healing. And that's what people need assistance and help with. I think so much of our modern day medicine, as brilliant as it is in certain situations, does end up making people feel very disempowered. It ends up making people feel they need to resort to certain drugs or technologies in order to be able to become fertile. And the truth of the matter is that none of those things are actually curative in themselves. So I often say that, you know, having a child doesn't necessarily make you fertile. And people find that a bit of a paradox, but there's truth in it, because if you think about it, we have means and methods of being able to create and effectively, you know, allow people to have children through many of the technologies that have been developed. But do we actually end up allowing people to become more fertile through those technologies? And the truth is that we don't, because there isn't anything curative about them. Sometimes there are means of bypassing certain issues, but not necessarily allowing a person to heal those issues. And I think and consider that really, really important, not just in terms of allowing someone that chance to be able to become pregnant themselves, but more than that, allowing them the chance to heal something that will inevitably have a positive impact for the rest of their lives. Because if you've got something there that's preventing you from being able to let's say, have a child or be naturally fertile, and if we can do something about it to help you, then isn't that what everyone wants? Isn't that a huge opportunity and call to action, almost a spiritual assignment, as I say, because actually having a child is first and foremost a spiritual assignment. But that spiritual assignment asks us to, first of all, learn to become aligned with ourselves, learn to heal, to become the parent that we need to ourselves and then to the children that we're going to have.
Amazing, amazing. Mm-hmm. So I have time for two more questions for you, Larissa. My next question is on technology and advancements. You know, given the kind of technology that's coming into all our lives, I'm sure in your field, technology must be really expanding fast. My question is, if you were to look into your crystal ball, what future advancements do you see in the field of fertility?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think it's such a rapidly fast-growing area of science and medicine. I mean, I definitely feel in this talk about it now of artificial intelligence coming into it. I think that the whole arena of pre-genetic diagnosis is also probably going to expand. So this is the means we have to be able to determine which embryos may have the greatest success rate but when they're being implanted. I think we will also probably develop technologies to be able to potentially do something to adjust eggs and sperm in the sense that we may be able to one day counter some of the effects of aging, for example, or be able to actively, I guess, manipulate certain processes that are going on. But the important thing here is that though the incentive to develop these technologies starts off being wanting to help people to have children, we've got to be really, really careful about how we use them. Just because we can doesn't mean that we should. Right. You know, and one of the examples we have with this is some of the embryo selection that potentially goes on. And sometimes there are really valid reasons for doing that. For example, when you're trying to avoid a particular genetic condition or disorder. But other times, it feels as if what we're trying to do is potentially, you know, create a form of eugenics whereby people are going to have the means, possibly one day, to select exactly what it is that they want. And the question then becomes, well, is that right? Should that be allowed? Is that ethically a responsible thing to do? Because, of course, every time we try and impose something like that, we are projecting certain windings within ourselves of what we think is great and what we think isn't, right? And we bias the world around us through that. So I think we have to look really, really carefully at our own ethics and principles when it comes to things like this and have these open forums and discussions, you know, to be able to decide what is the correct and integrous thing to do here.
Fascinating. And my last question to you, Larissa, and this is both, you know, the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation, and a very large number of them are young people, though you just told me a few minutes back that, you know, young is not an issue for motherhood. What message would you like to leave for women and couples struggling with fertility issues?
I'd love to leave them with the message to understand that the difference is them. The difference that they seek and want to make is in them, and the answers that they seek are within them. And so much of what I write about in the conception plan, which hopefully people will read, is, you know, that this book has been a real labor of love in trying to collect together so many different elements of what I consider constitute our own personal healing. Really, this is a book about healing, to be honest with you. It's a book about coming home to yourself and really understanding how it is that you got to where you are and doing something about where it is you want to go. And if that is becoming a parent, there are so many things that you can do to help yourself in that that will have an incredible impact on you, your life, but really importantly on the generations of children to come as well. So it's really worth doing. And, you know, there's no shortcut to that. Being able to heal is a huge aspect of anyone's life, and definitely when it comes to reproduction as well.
Very well said. And on that note, Larissa, let me first ask all my viewers and listeners to go and check out Dr. Larissa Korda's book, The Conception Plan. I'm sure you would have got an indication of all the stuff that will be there. A lot of your questions will be answered. So go and check out her book. Larissa, thank you for speaking to me about the conception plan. Thank you for speaking to me about such a powerful comment that you made, which is for people struggling with fertility issues, the answers are within them. Thank you also for speaking to me about so many different aspects of fertility. Some lot of things I didn't realize because I became a father 38 years ago. But I think there are many new things I learned for you. And finally, thank you for giving the gift of life to so many couples around the world. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.